This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. Welcome to the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Jim Goodis.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got sunshine right now, very warm, a high of 89 today, currently 86 at O'Hare, 84 along Chicago's lakefront.
A mixed day on Wall Street. Let's get the latest on the numbers live from Bloomberg and Elisa Peretti.
That's right, Jim and Chris. The Dow is lower, but just by 18 points. We're at 25,566. NASDAQ gaining 26 points, or a third of a percent. We're at 79.15. The number to break and beat is 79.32. So just a dozen points or so away from that high water mark. The S&P is gaining 2 points, and the Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by almost half a percent. What do you call an inflation report if there wasn't any? The government's July producer price index is in, and it's zero, at least from June. In terms of costs for services, they fell for the first time this year. The producer price index on the whole rose 3.3% from a year earlier. Many of the nation's employers are too nervous to get rid of their workers because of the increasing difficulty in finding replacements. That means unemployment lines got shorter again last week, and new jobless claim filings inched downward by 6,000 to a total 213,000. And oil futures are holding right near $67 a barrel. Back to you, Chris and Jim.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, Tribune Media dumps a merger and alleges breach of contract. And there's another high-profile deal becoming undone as well.
We're going to take a look at China and trade and the producer prices that Elisa just talked about and the job situation and find out what all that means for your investments coming up. It's Technology Thursday, and we'll take a look at social media and has it peaked? And we'll also take a look at the new Rock and Roll McDonald's, or at least what was the Rock and Roll McDonald's and what it's become. That's all ahead on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A wallet full of information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chinese leaders are receiving rare internal criticism for their handling of the trade dispute with the U.S., and we'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, two high-profile proposed mergers have fallen apart, and let's discuss the defunct Tribune Sinclair deal and the failed Rite Aid Albertsons pairing with Rob Brown, the CEO of the global advisory investment bank Lincoln International in Chicago. So, Rob, obviously Chicago's very own Channel 9 and other Tribune media properties not going to Sinclair. Let's talk about that deal. First of all, who do you think might be next in line for Tribune Media?
You know, that's a good question. There's been some speculation that it could be Robert Murdoch's Fox, and that seems to be the one name, and it's clear that that the Trib is going to actively start courting suitors again.
Why do you think, other than the issues that Sinclair had with the FCC, do you think there's any other reason why this deal fell apart? Because it seemed like Sinclair was really anxious to get in there, and at first it looked like it was going to sail through.
No, it did, and I think you have an FCC chairman in Ajit Pai who has really changed the regulations to make it easier to for acquisitions in the media space. And I don't think there's any other reason. I think this looked like a good deal on paper for Sinclair, a good deal for Tribune. But it does look like Sinclair took some very, very aggressive and possibly illegal measures in they were told they had to spin off some stations, and it looked like they were challenging that and trying to spin them off to affiliated parties, all with the backdrop of a clause in the merger agreement that said Sinclair would sell those stations in a manner that would avoid even the threat of any regulatory review. So, you know, this was a deal that the president wanted to go through. He tweeted about this, President Trump, and Sinclair may have just felt that with the president wanting to do this, we can be more aggressive with the FCC, and it looks to have backfired on him.
Well, we're hearing some bitter comments today. Tribune saying that Sinclair engaged in unnecessarily aggressive and protracted negotiations with the Department of Justice over requirements, and that was just one.
Yes, and normally when a regulatory body says we can put this merger through, but you have to sell off some assets, those are done quickly and quietly. And for whatever reasons, and they may come to light in the lawsuit that the Tribune has filed, they do appear to have not done that, and they gave the regulators a reason maybe not to approve this. And I think that's pretty frustrating for a Tribune and its shareholders.
Rob, do you think that another suitor is willing to pay as much for Tribune Media as Sinclair was? For example, if Murdoch and Fox come in, are they willing to pay what Sinclair was going to pay?
I don't know. They would have had the opportunity to pay this. I always operate under the assumption that whatever deal gets announced first was the highest price. So it's tough to speculate on that. You know, clearly there's now an expectation in the shareholder base of what the value should be. But again, my speculation is many times the rebound deal is at a lower value.
Well, there's another deal that is falling apart, and that is Rite Aid and Albertsons. What's going on there?
You know, this was one I really feel was almost doomed from the beginning. The market didn't like it from the beginning. Some of their institutional shareholders didn't like it from the beginning. Even some of the shareholder reps didn't like it from the beginning. I think there was a feeling that you had two me too players in grocery with Albertsons and in pharmacy with Rite Aid that needed to do something, were looking for scale, and they felt, you know, these two together, they could help each other's problems. But, you know, the stock, even before the announcement of the failed merger, was down almost 12%, Rite Aid, since they announced this. So I think this was one, as time went on and the stock didn't bounce back, I think this one was doomed not to go forward. There's been a lot of shakeup in grocery, obviously, with Amazon buying Whole Foods, and Albertsons has really underperformed its peers. You know, I think the fall apart of this is a bigger deal for Rite Aid, because, you know, they're now you know, you're competing with CVS and Walgreens, who are much, much larger, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what Rite Aid does here. I think what they really wanted to do was sell to Walgreens. The Department of Justice obviously blocked that earlier in the year.
Thank you for the insight, Rob Brown, CEO of the global advisory investment bank Lincoln International in Chicago. Coming up, the trade war with the U.S. appears to be having a negative effect on the power of the Chinese government.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chinese leaders are catching unusual flack from within the country over the trade war with the United States. And we are joined by Robert Dai, chief economist at Comerica Bank in Dallas. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Bob. What Chinese leaders don't normally get any flack, publicly at least.
Well, you're right, and to see these kinds of public pronouncements that there is some growing tension in China about how the leadership is handling the trade tensions with the U.S., that is unusual, and that tells us there's building pressure over there. It still doesn't tell us who's going to blink first, and right now we see this one-for-one ratcheting up of barriers, trade barriers on each side. So everyone knows this can't last. Everyone knows that this is not good for the world economy, but no one knows the end game right now. And I don't know, you know, how close we are to that end game. And I hope we are getting closer to it behind the scenes, but we're going to have to wait and see.
And what scenario would you guess is going to be appropriate for the United States?
Well, ideally, I think that it would be good for the U.S. and good for other countries in the world to try to get close to that imaginary and mythical level playing field with low barriers and as much free and open trade as possible, because that allows countries to specialize in what they do best, to gain economic efficiencies, and to expand their markets and to create good value for the people who are doing the producing. So, you know, that's the economist's dream, but the real world is a lot more complicated and messy, and I certainly understand, you know, why we're in this situation where trade programs around the world were not necessarily free and fair and open.
Bob, what are your thoughts on the PPI numbers today and the jobless claim numbers today?
Well, yeah, and this is a nice segue back to trade. When we look at the producer price index for July, we actually see no change, and that's a little bit below expectations. And when we look at the data, we cannot really identify at this point any impact from the tariffs. As I've said many times here, we think about three dimensions for the tariffs. We think about how high they are, how broad they are, and how long they extend. And so far, they're not high enough or broad enough or in place long enough to really start pushing that PPI up, because at least through July, producer prices were flat. And I think on a year-over-year basis, we're probably getting close to the peak on producer prices.
And what about the jobless numbers? And a bit surprising, perhaps, that even with all this tariff talk, they seem to be fairly solid.
Well, yes, and any just about any labor market indicator we're looking at right now is strong. And these jobless claims numbers, these are multi-decade lows. I mean, going back to the 70s and if not earlier. And so by just about any measure, labor markets in the U.S. are tight, but hiring continues, and this is good for the overall economy and should support wage growth. We haven't seen as much wage growth as expected yet, and again, most economists like myself expect to see more down the road, but the jobs numbers, the unemployment claims numbers, the hiring rates, they're all very, very good right now.
Bob, thanks for joining us today. Robert Dye, Chief Economist, Comerica Bank in Dallas.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's see what's happening on the markets live as we go to Bloomberg and Elisa Peretti.
Jim, not a whole lot of action today on Wall Street. The Dow is lower by 8 points at 25,575. NASDAQ gaining 29 points, or a third of a percent, and the S&P up 3. Here we are. It's Thursday, and we've got very little movement for the week. We are in the green. The biggest gain is for the NASDAQ composite, up about 1% over the four sessions. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is gaining 0.5% today. If you can't beat them, join them, or at least take advantage of their strengths. Ahead of the big Halloween season, the Party City store chain says it will sell costumes on Amazon.com this year. This would be the first time Party City ever sold those any costumes or anything outside its 900 stores and its own website. The company says if all goes well, it will also sell Christmas and New Year's items on Amazon. We've got crude oil futures, little change. They were slightly higher, now slightly lower, at $66.91. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had two-sided trade here ahead of the USDA report tomorrow on supply and demand. Corn's been up 1.5 to down 4.75. At the moment, December down 1.5 at 383.5. Beans have been up 4 to down 8. Presently, they are down 5.25. At 9.05 1/4 in November, and wheat's been up 3 to down 8. Wheat for September down 6 at 5.64. All lower at the moment at the Board of Trade. And this is Pete Manhart.
Pete, thank you. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Welcome to the second half of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Jim Gutis.
I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio, WBBM.
Stocks are mixed. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Technology Thursday, signs that social media use may be on the decline after a long and steady increase.
The new urban garden version of McDonald's is now open in Chicago's River North.
Government of Puerto Rico says the death toll from Hurricane Maria is more than 1,400 compared to the official total of 64.
On the WBBM Market Watch, the Dow is down 9 now, the S&P 500 ahead by 3, and the NASDAQ up by 30 points.
86 degrees right now at O'Hare, 84 along Chicago's lakefront, and a possibility of a thunderstorm in some places.
WBBM News Time, 12:31, and it's been a quiet day on Wall Street so far, and we're joined by Jack Ablin, the Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Wealth Advisors in Chicago. So, Jack, your take on what's happening with the markets today?
Well, it is somewhat of a quiet day. We're digesting more headline news than we are earnings news. I think investors are watching what Elon Musk is going to come up with, so back up his tweet. But other than that, it seems like pretty quiet trading today.
Are people just kind of sitting there and just kind of taking a breather, considering what we've seen over the last couple of weeks or so, the last few months, depending on how you want to look at the market? Are people just kind of sitting back and saying, all right, let's see where we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, Jim, it seems like they're two cross currents going on. There's the, of course, the geopolitical global headlines with tariffs and tensions and trade and all that. And investors are worried that at some point that's going to start impacting the economy and earnings and so forth. And then there are the earnings reports, and the earnings reports are nothing short of spectacular. So far this year, earnings growth is up about 26.5%, and you know, investors are somewhat skeptical. The S&P is up only about 6% in response to that. So I do think that there is somewhat of an off-balance tone here, and we're just trying to reconcile those cross currents.
And so what would you say to investors?
I would say, in general, the indicators that I watch suggest that you should stay in the market. The valuation is reasonable. The economic backdrop is still okay, positive. Liquidity has actually made a turn for the improvement over the last 6 weeks. And momentum is positive. So for now, this is a sort of a steady as she goes risk on environment. And we'll just have to see, you know, what wins out, the headlines or the fundamentals.
One of the stories that we're covering today is the Tribune Media story that it's off. A merger is off. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this was more politically motivated or just. I know that Trunk was somewhat disappointed with how. How the pre-deal posturing was going. So in spite of President Trump's support, I think, you know, they're just going to walk away for right now, and maybe they either restructure something else or look for another buyer.
Jack, any thoughts on the Rite Aid Albertsons fallout?
Yeah, I mean, here again is something that, this was something shareholders were not really too keen on. You've got two markets, both of which it seems Amazon is going after, both in the grocery store side, but also in now the drugstore side. And I think that that business combination doesn't appear to be an answer to the threats that shareholders see on the horizon.
Where do you what are you looking at now when you look at the technology sector?
Sure. So I did do a piece earlier this week on the mega caps. So these are the largest companies, you know, like the Apples just crossed the $1 trillion mark. And what I noticed is that their profit margins are in the 98th percentile, at least above the 90th percentile of their historical range. And so economics 101 would suggest, you know, you can't have profit margins that wide without inviting competition or having it roll over or maybe even government regulation or some kind of control. I think this time is different. The government has decided to take a hands-off approach to these mega caps. In fact, I would argue the regulations, and it's not just tech, it's in banking and other places, but it's the regulations that they have imposed over the last several years have actually helped the largest companies because smaller companies have to allocate more resources to accomplish the same goals that a larger company would. They obviously have economies of scale. But if policymakers believe that we're in this global capitalist fight for dominance, then the last thing I want to do is disadvantage our largest players, especially if they think that their foreign competitors are going to be fully armed and ready for battle. So I think that, you know, any thought that, you know, an Apple or Amazon or Facebook or others will be somehow defanged is probably not going to happen. And from an investment point of view, that's why we like the largest 50 companies in the S&P, and we're pairing that with small cap stocks.
All right, that's Jack Ablin, the Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Wealth Advisors here in Chicago. Always great to get your take on what's going on. Ahead in Technology Thursday, there may be some signs social media use has peaked.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday, sponsored by Normandy Remodeling. Snap, the parent company of the Snapchat app, says it lost 3 million daily active users in the second quarter from earlier this year. This comes one day after we discussed Facebook's diminishing numbers. And let's talk about all of that with Shira Ovide, the columnist with Bloomberg out of New York. So, Shira, is this an indication that perhaps social media use has peaked?
It's possible, although it's a little too soon to tell. So, in addition to Facebook and Twitter also having some issues adding more users in the most recent period, as you said, Snapchat kind of lost some viewers. But they said that they redesigned the app in the last 6 months and then kind of redesigned the redesign when it didn't quite work out as they expected. So it's possible that people kind of tuned out for a little while Snap gets its house in order and they may come back. But we'll see what happens in the next few months, whether we can call kind of a peak for social media.
And we're also seeing a similar trend for Twitter, are we not?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Twitter and Facebook both actually kind of the number of people who use their services on a daily or monthly basis kind of flatlined in the U.S. and Canada in the last few months. And again, those companies said, look, this was at least in part due to intentional decisions that those companies made to do things like, you know, weed out trolls and harassing behavior on those social networks, and to kind of weed out viral videos that maybe are just kind of junk that people don't really need to waste their time on Facebook. But I just don't know how much of those subscriber losses or user losses are self-inflicted and how much of it is a sign of fatigue that people just kind of moved on to spend time on other things.
We said yesterday that the older members of society who are watching the like Facebook and Twitter, they are there. They're doing pictures of their grandchildren and all of that. But among the younger users, they're always looking for a new thing to do.
That is true. That's true. That young people tend to be kind of fickle about how they spend their time online. There hasn't been kind of a big breakout, kind of new app hit for young people in a while. But it could just be that people's time is being just split up into more and more chunks, right? So people might be dividing their time among, you know, Netflix and Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook and go on down the list of all the popular things to do either online or in the real world. And that may be what we're seeing with some of the big social media hangouts, seeing a little bit of a lag in the number of people spending time there avidly.
Shira, is the thought that existing social media just has to make adjustments to attract a younger audience, or are we going to have to see the next breakthrough social media platform, the next breakthrough app, that sort of thing, to really bring more young people into social media?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, it's not like young people are spending less time glued to their phones. You can just see that on every street and every household in America that young people in particular, they live on their phones. It just may be that they're spending their time differently than they used to. So it's maybe less Facebook and even less Snapchat than it was a year or two ago. And more just other things. And look, we'll see what happens in the long term. I don't think people are turning away from their phones, especially young people, but it may just be that they're choosing different ways to spend the time, the many hours a day they do spend on their phones.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Shira. Shira Ovide is columnist at Bloomberg News in New York. And join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, the replacement for downtown Chicago's rock and roll McDonald's has opened its doors.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A new modern version of McDonald's is opened in downtown Chicago. And let's talk about the 19,000 square foot restaurant at Clark and Ontario with Bridget Sweeney, the reporter from Crain's Chicago Business. Now, of course, many of us, Bridget, remember that as the rock and roll McDonald's, but it's far different today, isn't it?
Absolutely, Jim. So many people, obviously, in Chicago are familiar with the pretty iconic, huge McDonald's right in River North at Clark and Ontario, which it was built back in 1983. It's been known as the rock and roll McDonald's for as long as I think many of us can remember. But that name, as of today, really has no more bearing because all of the memorabilia and the kind of music-related, kind of nostalgic-driven, items and paraphernalia that they have scattered across all the walls, it's all gone. And now it's been replaced by a much more modern, sleek, kind of eco-friendly vibe, which McDonald's is trying to use as an example of A, their modern stores, which they're in the process of doing, and B, this new commitment to sustainability and eco-friendliness, which extends across a lot of different initiatives the company is trying to do over the next decade or so.
So, Bridget, if you want to see the future of McDonald's, this is the place to go.
Absolutely. It's not the first, I will say. So people who have been paying attention may know that a handful of other McDonald's have gotten these kind of makeovers. They're called the McDonald's of the future. In the next couple of years, the company wants to redo all of its stores, all of its 14,000 restaurants across the country. Actually, a neighbor of the Rock and Roll McDonald's, the McDonald's at Chicago Avenue and State Street, was the first in the city to get the redo about a year and a half ago.
So when you walk into this restaurant now, the McDonald's flagship, what do you see?
Gosh, well, the big kind of drawing point in the center of the restaurant, it's a two-story restaurant. But now all the seating is, on the first floor, and above you in this kind of elevated floating glass case is this little mini forest or garden of birch trees and ferns and lots of greenery. And so it's kind of a really cool kind of like atelier. I don't even know quite how to describe it, but it's definitely not, records and Elvis stuff on walls anymore.
And it's 24 hours a day also.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Bridget, let me ask you this. Was the rock and roll motif not working anymore? Is that the reason they decided to make the change? Or is it really to give people a better idea of what the McDonald's of today and tomorrow is going to be?
Honestly, Jim, the company doesn't speak exactly to that point, but I think any onlooker could see it's definitely both. They say, it's very much a sign of what's to come for the company. But I think we all know that, and based on, sales numbers that have been declining over the past few years, it did need a new facelift, both on its menu and on its restaurant looks. Obviously, under Steve Easterbrook, who's taken over and really revved things up, they're just changing everything. So I think from the Rock and Roll McDonald's, it's one of the highest value McDonald's in the city and in the country. It's a huge tourist destination. I know it remains a place that people with kids, love. But I think given the fact that it was both outdated from a decor perspective, and also they don't want to be a tourist destination anymore. They want to be a sleek, kind of higher end restaurant that people with kids can still have a great time at and have a good option, good options there. But also the parents won't be rolling their eyes or kind of going, just for the kids.
Yeah, that's for sure. Bridget Sweeney, the reporter from Crane Chicago Business, as always, thanks for talking with us. If you missed any part of today's WBBM Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app. WBBM News Time, 12:55. When searching for a new Buick or GMC, search Howard Buick GMC. Let's get the latest live on the markets. We go to Bloomberg and Elisa Peretti.
Jim, the Dow lower by just 5 points now, and the Nasdaq's gains are growing, up 35 points. The S&P adding 3. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining 0.3%. Viacom is helping to keep the Nasdaq up after its earnings report. The horror movie A Quiet Place helped profit come in ahead of estimates, and Viacom shares are up 4.5%. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9. 9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago. WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.